My name is Doug Bloss. I'm from Lansing, Michigan, AM County Health Department, and I'm going to talk to you about, we are one of several health departments around the country that are trying to change our practice and try to change our community and its approach to health, community health, public health. And we are taking a very specific approach to that, which is using dialogue as a vehicle for change. And what I'm going to talk to you today is about how that has evolved, basically what we have learned from that, and two arguments I want to make to you for the idea that we have to address the root causes of health inequity, meaning racism, classism, and gender discrimination explicitly in order to get anywhere. So I'm going to do that very quickly. I encourage you to look. I hope that in the available PowerPoint that will come after this, you will see the hidden slides as well, the ones that I've had to take out just for time. I'm going to try to breeze through this rather quickly. Our project's goal is to reclaim public health's role in addressing health inequity through social justice, and also to transform public health practice from its strictly regulatory and categorical functions to ones that address the root causes. And as I just said, we're talking specifically about institutional racism, class oppression, gender discrimination and exploitation, and the other forms of oppression, those based on sexual orientation, age, language of origin, immigrant status, all of that we consider to be root causes. I'm using Dennis Raphael's definition here of social determinants of health, which you can read there. As it says, include but are not limited to things like safe, affordable housing, living wage, quality education. And I want to place those into a context using a diagram that our colleague Richard Hofrichter at NACHO, National Association of City and County Health Officials, has used, and which shows up in Tackling Health Inequities, the book that he edited. Basically showing that, I found this very useful actually in explaining what we're trying to do here, that these social determinants create, in fact, the psychosocial stress and unhealthy behaviors, which is where we put most of our energy in public health, 90% at least in our department, which lead to the disparity in the distribution of disease and well-being. But to go farther up this chain of causality to power and wealth imbalance and the things that impact that, housing policy, education systems, tax policy, globalization, and then to go beyond that to realize what impacts that are these root causes of racism, class oppression, and gender discrimination. Most of the efforts, I think, around the country that in local public health departments that are trying to move us upstream, if you accept that metaphor, are moving us more toward thinking about the social determinants and coming at those from a public health perspective and advocating for those. What I want to argue, and I'm going to give you the reasons why, is why we have decided we have to go to the top of this chart if we're going to get anywhere. Two arguments I'm going to give. This is the end of my presentation. I'm giving it early because I'm afraid I won't get to it. If I do get to it, I'll get it in more detail. The two arguments for doing this are this. Race, class, and gender oppression in their modern forms are pervasive and insidious. And each time that they are identified, unearned privilege asserts itself to diminish them as concerns. This has been our experience in Ingham County and in our health department. I'm convinced that people in the sort of the non-target group of whatever we're talking about, so non-target, it's white people, the people that are not targeted for oppression, can get this idea for about 15 minutes, maybe 2 hours. They can accept that racism is important to think about. But by the next meeting or by half an hour later, you're back to thinking about business as usual. We have to find a way, and the reason that is because of unearned privilege that comes to us either by being white, by being male, by being of a higher socioeconomic status, etc. So our theory now and our argument is that we have to address these things and get people to understand them at this level. Also, in terms of change within a thing like a health department, in order to undo our entrenched ideas of business as usual, we have to actively create an organizational culture where challenges to privilege and oppression are routinely welcomed. And that ain't easy, creating that kind of a dynamic in your organization. But we're trying to do it. We're doing it slowly, 20 people at a time, in these workshops that we do. The challenge of doing this work is that to tackle these forms of oppression explicitly, we have to find ways to make dialogue about race, class, and gender, and other forms of difference, tolerable to people who experience oppression daily, to people who say, yeah, I know that's true, I see it every day, and to people who have no idea and no awareness that such oppression occurs. There are people other than in these two classifications of people, but there's a lot of people that fall into these two groups, and they have trouble understanding each other, as you might understand, and that's why we do four-day workshops to address this. I want to talk, in Ingham County, we intentionally developed We had done an action plan in 2005 that basically sat on a shelf. Everybody applauded loudly for it and didn't get us anywhere. The only one whose practice changed was me. I became the health equity and social justice coordinator for the department. Nothing else changed. We decided we needed to develop the capacity to conduct these intensive dialogue-based four-day workshops involving both our employees and interested community members. And we also have a formula for who is involved. We make sure we have only two people from each division of our department. People usually don't know who's from the department, who's not in these workshops, so we're all community in it. And they're 4 days long. Oops, I went backwards, sorry. The strategic purpose of the workshops was to equip participants to recognize oppression and privilege in their impact on the health of the community, and to equip them to engage others to become change agents themselves in challenging conversations about those impacts. I want to make clear here that the workshops were not conversations about race, class, and gender. They were not debates about oppression, privilege, and the role of public health. And they were not training in cultural competency or diversity. I'm borrowing here, actually, I should have cited William Isaacs. This is not quoting him exactly, but his writing in the book Dialogue and the Art of Thinking Together sort of sparked our thinking about what we were doing. Conversation is what we normally engage in, and if you look at it carefully, you notice it's usually casual, undirected exploration of an idea. It usually marginalizes difference. We try to get the things that make us different sort of out of the room and out of the circle of conversation, and it relies heavily on consensus. We want to get to a place where we can all agree. Dialogue does the opposite of those three things. It's vigorous and directed. It tries to answer specific questions that we're all interested in. It welcomes difference. You have to have it. You have to welcome it into the room, and you have to take a collective approach, recognizing we all have part of the truth. If we're going to get to the truth, we need all of us in there. It's not debate, and having just gone through an election cycle, you all know what this is about. Highlights competing factions. It looks for the best solution. There's only one. Emphasis is on persuading other people to think like you do. In dialogue, even though we welcome difference, there's a common purpose of answering a question or trying to solve something that's important to all of us. There's multiple complementary solutions discovered. And there's an emphasis not on persuading, but on listening to each other. That's why you need facilitators. We trained 30 people to become facilitators, a 12-day training over 7 months in our community, half of us health department, half of us community. And that team has grown as time has gone on, and we've done more of those trainings. But that's an important part of this. These sessions, these workshops, are not trainings. Because in a training, you're exchanging unilaterally information, you're embracing what you know to be true, and you're teaching new solutions to people. What we try to emphasize is that we're talking about a mutual exchange. The facilitators only know so much, and they don't know everything, and they don't have all the truth. We embrace what we do not know, as opposed to what we do know. And we try to discover new solutions in the process of these 4 days we spend together. Another concept, if you see the longer PowerPoint, you will see that there's lots of constructs for talking about this, which is what we provide early on in the workshop. But one of them is Valerie Batt's idea of the four levels of oppression and change. Just to get these quickly, the personal level is basically the feelings, the ideas you have in your head that you carry with you. Interpersonal is when that becomes action or behavior, language with another person. The institutional level, we're talking about rules, policies, and procedures. Unwritten policies also, practices. You know, you may have a policy that's great, but we exercise it and we enact it different ways with different people. And the cultural level, which is collective ideas that we're all participating in about what's normal, true, right, and beautiful. Our first attempt at this action plan we developed tried to go right at the institutional level, because these are also the levels of change. So we tell the institution what needs to change, and it'll just change like that. As you heard from Lisa's testimony, that didn't work there either. And I don't think it ever does. So that's what led us to this idea that we needed to work on the hearts and minds of the people in our institution through these workshops. And that's what led us to this approach. To tell you a little bit about the workshops, the structure and content of them. I'm not going to go into detail about these elements of our workshop, but basically you have 2 days consecutive, then you let people go for about 2 or 3 weeks, sometimes 4 weeks, and then you come back together for another 2 days. In the first day, we're trying to get some of these core ideas like target and non-target groups, the four levels of oppression and change in people's heads. We then begin to work a little bit more on that very touchy concept of privilege, which a lot of people who have privilege have a real hard time hearing, and try to make that visible for people. Because for those of us who are white and male, I mean, our whiteness and the unearned privilege that comes from being white and male simply is not visible until someone points it out to us. We just don't see it, and we don't know what you're talking about until you make us look at it. So we go through trying to expose that, reveal that, talk about that, talk about what makes us feel as much as how it makes us think. And then we let people go and live their lives for a couple of weeks. We come back. A large part of what happens next is we talk about what they experienced and saw in the intervening time. We talk about the difference between modern and traditional forms of oppression. Okay. We look at some case studies that illuminate how this affects health. Yes, we're finally getting to health in this. Actually, we do touch it on it earlier. But we really explicitly try to get to how this impacts the health of our community. And then we practice through what I guess you could call role plays, but they're a very specific kind of role plays where you can replay and rewind and do things over again and you comment on what people are doing. To try to practice getting into these conversations and envisioning change at the institutional level. We've had probably now over 200 people have gone through the workshop. Some observations, a little distinction between employees and non-employees. There's a lot of surprise at the content and the approach. People think that it's going to be something different, like a diversity training or a cultural competency training. The most change has come from those people that were mandated to come. We didn't have these be mandatory for the first six workshops, but some people thought they were and didn't want to be there. And actually, those people have tended to be the ones who are most appreciative afterward because it's not what they expected it to be. Responses vary greatly between day two and day four. There's a lot of people upset about the workshop after day two. Not a majority, but there's a healthy minority of people who are upset about having to talk about privilege. At day four, you find there's a lot of people more upset about inequity and what to do about it. Resistance to the idea of privilege by members of non-target groups. Some people talk about feeling attacked simply because you're pointing out privilege. We're used to that. We recognize it's part of the journey. Also regrets by people in target groups to having to relive the pain and the fatigue of their oppression, especially if it looks like we're doing this to no, discernible value to the community. The stories that come out in these workshops obviously are very painful for many people, and we think long and hard about the value of doing that if we're not going to get anywhere. We have a lot of conversations going on in the workplace, but mostly the negative stuff is coming from people who have not been in the workshop yet. I'm going to just quickly get through some findings here, and then I'll stop. The pre and post questionnaire findings, we asked four different kinds of questions. One is, do you understand these concepts that you see here? And basically what you'll see are the pre-number is the first circle, and the post-number is the second circle. So we do see significant changes in people's understanding of the terms, at least, and how social justice relates to my work. Awareness questions, we asked about four different things that you could think of as determinants of health, moving from simply behaviors and lifestyle to medical care to the actual social determinants, things like housing and transportation, to achieve power and wealth regardless of opportunity to achieve power and wealth regardless of difference. The two I want to point out are the first and last. You'll notice that those who identified behaviors and lifestyle, even though we know those are important and we do talk about them being important, it's gone down significantly. The one that went up the highest was the affordable housing, transportation, and inadequate wage, but we do see rise also in those who see opportunity and power as being significant. Awareness questions. In our community, people are discriminated on the basis of these things. You'll see it goes up for all three different degrees. Comfortable talking questions. I am comfortable talking with others about discrimination or prejudice based on. These are real interesting. I just want to say that we actually considered, in some of the workshops, the race one goes down. And we consider that a victory, because a lot of the people coming into the room actually are people who say, I'm totally comfortable talking about race. They discover what it means to actually talk about race, and they come away with, I need to do some more work on this. I mean, I say that because of the qualitative stuff that also comes in from the workshop. So I'm not going to go through in more detail what my argument and my challenge stuff is, but I will welcome further conversation about that. Another piece I just want to point out, we believe that the leadership of an organization, the community that we work for, and the workforce all have to be involved together in this important part of our work, and I would love to talk to any of you who are interested in this in the future. Thank you.